step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Let's talk to Michael Sean Dugar about a little football, shall we, here in the 5 o'clock hour. Dick Fain, Hugh Millen. No Dave Softy Mahler, hopefully for just one more day as he is recovering from his illness. And Michael Sean joining us. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. What's got Softy sick? Did he rewatch the most recent Apple Cup a bunch of times?
Oh, wow. How about that? Well, it could only be the most recent one because none of the other ones, like in the last 8 years, would make him remotely sick. So there's only one possibility that he could watch, right?
That's the only one he's got to watch. That's fine with me. We can watch it together if he's up for it.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? You know, we should auction that off. We should actually auction off a night with Mike Dugar and Dave Softy Mahler watching the 2021 Apple Cup. Oh, my God. How much could that get, Hugh? Think that could get some money?
I think so, and I think that the tonic that made Softy feel better was looking at the all-time record.
Well, that's true. He's already feeling better just looking at the record. All right, we'll get off the Apple Cup talk. And, Mike, we haven't talked to you since the big news last week, scheduling came out, and we're going to get to see Russ in week number one, and I just can't help but think that's got to be best-case scenario for the Seahawks going into that opener where the place is going to be buzzing a lot more than it would be if the Seahawks were, say, 5-8 in week 14.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess it's best-case scenario, but I don't think that if the game was in week 16 and the Seahawks are going to do some math here, I'm like 4-9 or something like that, that stadium would be any quieter, especially if it was a primetime game, too. I just think Russ's return is big enough to get people juiced up. Like if ticket sales fell in price, between weeks like 12 and 15, week 16 comes and Russ is coming, I bet you them tickets would be a lot harder to get. That's just kind of how big of a deal Russell is. Not only here, but, look at the Broncos. How many primetime games did they get solely because they have Russell? Like, they weren't a good team.
Yeah, they got five. Year. I mean, they're maxed out just like the Seahawks were usually maxed out when they had Russell Wilson.
Right, and it's all Russell, right? There's no other reason to. I don't think they made the playoffs last year, which is usually how you get that. They don't have, some hot new coach. It's, a big deal. Like, that was a personality like a John Gruden. No, they have Russell Wilson, so they're, networks are vying to have them on TV. So, I do think it is best-case scenario, though. At the same time, beyond just how loud it'll be there, I really am fascinated by, that being the starting point of both sides' journey to prove the other one wrong. Russell kind of believes very strongly, I can do this. You tell people sometimes when they have an idea, the grass isn't greener. Well, Russ believed it is. He wanted to run over there and see if the grass is greener somewhere else, and he could cook somewhere else. And the Seahawks, the same thing. I would have told them not to trade Russell because the grass is not greener. When you're in quarterback purgatory, and they decided, no, Mike, we can do this. Mm-hmm. We can go get Drew or Geno or maybe wait it out a year. We can survive without Russell. And week one won't define, both sides' journeys. But like I said, it's a huge step forward, in either direction, with both sides trying to prove that they can, survive without the other.
What's your understanding of Russell Wilson, his mindset, and how he projected that and conveyed that to the Seahawks in terms of just his desire to get out, whether it's the offense, whether it's the personalities, how difficult did he make it, and how difficult was he to coach? Some of those factors, what's your understanding of just how untenable it became?
Well, clearly very untenable if they split. But I think, Russ, it's not any secret. I have some inside information. But honestly, you could just read the public breadcrumbs and see the ways that Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson weren't aligned. Look at all the off seasons where he deviated from normal Russ stuff to say, hey, I want our offense to be more like the Chiefs, naming a team specifically. That was the year the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl and won it. Saying we need more superstars on defense. I think that was during a Pro Bowl. A few years ago, saying that he wants to throw it more, saying his goals of how many passing touchdowns he wanted, saying his goal of I want to win MVP, trademarking let Russ cook. He had, you know, how many years did we hear Russell talk about how many times he wants to go up tempo and attack teams early? Like all these things that basically signaled that Russ was the antithesis of Pete Carroll in terms of, you know, offensive philosophy, you know, for lack of a better term. Like that was what he was trying to tell us for years publicly. You know, how many times did he critique the old line, like with subtle jabs, and then just go full blown critique them on the Dan Patrick show a couple off seasons ago? He's been telling us, guys, these are the things that I need to be great. Here's what I want to do. If he wouldn't say those things if they were getting done behind the scenes. So he's always been doing it publicly in a nice way with a smile, not necessarily pissing anybody off, you know, when he says these things necessarily with his tone. He's just saying it. Like, I want to do this. I want to throw it. Meanwhile, his coach is like, I believe in the balance that the run game presents. That's all I really needed to hear. That's what got me doing the digging that has produced some of the stories that me and my colleagues at The Athletic have produced. And the Russ didn't have to go in there and cuss anybody out or throw any chairs or anything. He probably went in there with a smile and said, look, I've made my stance clear for a long time. You know, I want to cook. I want to win. I want to win a certain way. You know, let's do it. And once the winning wasn't happening, I think Pete and John didn't have to wonder what he wanted at that point. It was probably pretty obvious by the end.
And yet, because Pete is so comfortable playing the style where he's leaning on a running game that clearly got better in the draft, both in the offensive line and particularly with Kenneth Walker, and a defense that, you know, is nowhere close to elite, but I don't think has massive gaping holes either. I still feel like this team can be competitive because of Pete Carroll and that style, and he's not going to put his quarterback in harm's way for 17 games. And that's why when the schedule went out, we did our round the horn projections, and I had them winning like 8 games. You know, Softy had them winning 7 games. You know, Jackson thinks they're going to fall off a cliff. So where do you kind of land on that? You know, just trust in Pete that with his style of play, he's going to be able to squeeze more wins out than a lot of Seahawk fans think.
I'm on the other end of that. Okay. I think I got him at like five wins.
Okay.
I think I got him at 5-12. And the reason being, just you need a lot of things to swing your way in Pete's style. And we just saw it last year. What happens when those things don't swing your way? I mean, people were even trying to tell us that in 2019 in 2020, when the Seahawks, maybe just 2019 and 2018, when the Seahawks won a lot of games, like double-digit games, but had like a really small point differential, I think specifically in 2019. And point differential is a bit stronger than record for certain things. Like, I think point differential tells you more of what's going to happen versus your record tells you what has already happened. So, like, if you make the playoffs at, like, look at the Steelers last year. I forget what they made the playoffs at. I think like 9-7-1. He had like a negative 55 point differential, right? I could have told you they were going to get smoked by Kansas City, if for no other reason than that. Whereas the Seahawks were probably a better team than the Steelers, despite being 7-10. They were like plus 9, I think, for the year, which is pretty crazy for a team with a losing record. Mm-hmm. So I bring that up to suggest that, like, if your whole thing is like, well, when it's close, we'll just win. Well, okay. The ball has to bounce your way. Field goals have to be made. Flags have to go your way. You know, there's so many things that have to go right. Yeah. If your whole thing is like grind it out, consistently grinding it all out is really, really tough. I think the other thing that people overlook is, I don't care how many times your quarterback has to throw, when he does throw, he has to be good at it, right? Like, really good in situational football in particular, right? Like, you need to be able to throw in the red zone. You need to be able to throw in 2-minute situations. You need to be able to throw on third down. I don't care if you got the best running game in the world. In those situations, particularly high leverage, like in the playoffs, your quarterback needs to be damn near excellent. I don't care who it is. Like, those situations are just hard to hide, even if you are the number one running offense, you know, in the world. And I think that that's where the quarterback situation leads me closer to 5 games than it does the year 8 game. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, though. It could be anywhere from like 4-8, but I err on the lower side of that just because of, you know, no matter what your run game or your defense is like, situational football matters at the end of the day, and it will break, you know, a team that's not prepared for it.
What is your percent chance and likelihood that Seattle re-signs DK Metcalf?
Ooh,
assign a number to that based on your reporting.
This is 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 10. Where are we going here?
Percentages. We're talking percentages.
Oh, percentage. Okay, gotcha. Let's see. I would say about. I feel a little bit better about it than if you'd asked me this like a month ago. I'd probably say like 65, maybe. I don't want to go full like much higher than that, just because it's really expensive to retain a number one wide receiver right now. And so many teams are showing us, like, how valuable these rookies are right off the bat. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Ja'Marr Chase or a Justin Jefferson or even like a CeeDee Lamb. You know, we'll see what happens with Treylon Burks in Tennessee after the Titans shipped off A.J. Brown. That's another example. I mean, the Packers have only had Devontae Adams. And they're like, we can get rid of him too. You know, and we'll see how that gamble goes. But you kind of can see a shift. That 35% that I'm leaving on them not paying him is kind of based on the league-wide shift to say, hey, wait a minute now. This 7-on-7 stuff is churning out these 22, 23-year-old kids who can come in the league and ball. So can we get them on this rookie scale, or do we need to pay the next guy $25 million plus or whatever? Now, that's, I say it's a shift, but not a full-on change, which is why I got the 65% in there. I just think that at the end of the day, these guys kind of know, A, if you don't pay DK, like, that's just a really bad look for your locker room. Like, who's going to feel good about their place here if a 24-year-old DK Metcalf, who's put up the numbers he has, can't get paid at a premier position, right? Is this going to look a little wonky? And if you were to trade him, good Lord, like, I know they're not selling the full-on rebuild right now, but you can't lie to your locker room or your coaching staff if you say, hey, guys, let's compete this year without a DK Metcalf, you know, on your roster, like, grabbing some picks for him in exchange. So I think ultimately they'll have to make that payday. I don't know what it'll look like exactly, but I think A.J. Brown's deal is probably the baseline. So I'm a little bit more confident based on kind of just projecting common sense onto Pete and John and taking some of their words at face value with Pete and John, kind of making it like, yo, we want to keep this guy, and we know how expensive it's going to be to keep him.
So you think it's the 7-on-7s that are making these wide receivers more NFL ready versus, you know, just talent, like Justin Jefferson's, Ja'Marr Chase. These guys are just better players than the guys coming out in 2015, 16, 17, because there was a good stretch there where rookie wide receivers did nothing at all for, like, you know, there was a 5-6 year run. So you think it's because youth football's changed?
Yeah. I think the proliferation of 7-on-7 has had a huge impact, not just on the receivers, but the DBs too are really, really a lot more polished, and they have been a lot more patient, you know, better technique. They're just coming in a little better, understanding of route concepts. You talk to a lot of high school coaches, AAU, college coaches who do all the scouting, like, for, you know, recruiting of these kids. They'll tell you, like, these kids are ready. And some of it is just, like, the advantages of the game, right? Like, you look at DNs and offensive players, like, it's just a physics thing. They go forward in their job, and it's just a lot easier to do that as opposed to being a DB or, like, a lineman when they go backwards, right? That's why the linemen and the DBs get picked, you know, so high. And they're so much harder to find in the later rounds. But, yeah, I think it's a talent thing just from the ground up. These kids, and you're also just getting freak athletes at these receiver positions too, and also at receiver compared to some other spots. They can come in all different sizes. So you got, like, a population advantage. Like, America just doesn't produce a bunch of 300-pound fat kids, right, that are athletic. Mm-hmm. That's just not what we do. We can produce a guy built like Tyler Lockett or a guy built like DK or Doug Baldwin or Justin Jefferson. Like, I think that goes into it too. There's a lot of things that is going to lead to basically receivers being like running backs, where I think teams are going to stop paying them and say, hey, we can just draft the next guy from Ohio State or whatever on the rookie scale and be fine.
Hugh, you still there?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
I got you. I'm wondering if Hugh's still there. I don't hear him. So, We'll get him reconnected. Go ahead and bring him down there, Anders, until we get him reconnected. You mentioned the 5-win team.
Don't you hear me?
Oh, now I do. Now I do. We lost you for a minute there, Hugh.
Yeah. Behind the scenes, I was like, yeah, I'm still here.
now I got you.
I don't know if you heard me. You know, the big slot. I think guys, younger receivers, having to learn to play in the middle of the field, I think you just learn about defenses that much more. So, guys, you're seeing the Justin Jeffersons, a lot of there was a year there where CeeDee Lamb, where the first time where you see college receivers coming in and they have more snaps from the slot than they do outside. So I think that's a factor. But switching to the other side of it, Clint Hurt and his move to the 3-4, real substantive change. How do you think the Seahawks feel about how they are equipped right now to make that change?
You know, it's going to sound weird because, like, they don't have as much talent, right? But I think that's okay. You know, as much talent as they had, like, in the Legion of Boom cover 3 days, they don't have as much talent as before, and I think they would, like, acknowledge that, right? It's really hard to just have a bunch of Hall of Famers in your secondary, you know? But, like, with the new scheme, like, you can work with that. much easier. I don't think anybody will say that part out loud because you don't want to, you know, sound like you're saying your guys suck. But they don't. But there's, when you don't have Earl Thomas there, maybe you should play cover two. I mean, sometimes it's kind of just that simple. Look at some of the coaches that have left from Pete Carroll's coaching tree and have tried to play cover three and then gotten fired. Why? Because they were trying to run cover three with safeties that ain't Earl, right? Giving up explosives all over the place. So I think the 3-4 and the split safety, you know, look, it just gives them a lot of versatility. They can be a lot more multiple, I think, with the 3-4 and the kind of the two high look, whether you want to run cover two out of that, cover four out of that, cover six out of that, whether you want to show cover two and then spin one of your safeties down. So now you're playing like cover one, cover three, you know, there's tons of stuff you can do off of those looks that'll confuse your quarterback or just maybe just make the picture a little murkier, you know, so he's not just seeing one thing pre-snap and getting that post-snap. I think that's, as much as Vic Fangio stuff has like become more popular across the league defensively, I just think muddying the picture for the quarterback is the thing that's really popular. Like, hey, we can't just show this look and run it like the Legion of Boom era defense could do because they were a bunch of badasses. I think teams have kind of acknowledged that we can't do that. Pete Carroll specifically has acknowledged with this scheme change, we can't do that. We got to disguise some stuff, mix up some blitzes, mix up some fronts, because if we just line up and try to kick the other team's butt, we're going to go 7-10. So I think because of that and with some of the people I've talked to, I think everybody's excited about the scheme, mixing it up, and just everybody being able to do a little bit of everything. And also I think some of the DBs are really excited about being able to play a little bit more man. Not like cover zero. DBs hate cover zero. But just, you know, get your hands on guys and play man, which is a lot of these guys' strong suits.
Mike, I'd like to know how confident you are in Pete and John to find the next Pro Bowl quarterback. Because I could really see it both ways. I could see if somebody just steps up and say, well, listen, how many Pro Bowl quarterbacks, you know, quality quarterbacks are there out there? I mean, only one quarter of the NFL has a Pro Bowl quality quarterback. So, you know, odds would say you got a 25% chance of finding one. That's not good. But then I could also see the other side that says, yeah, you know, this is a really good system for a young quarterback to come in because Pete's not going to throw you to the wolves. Because Pete's not going to do the New York Jets, just come save our franchise, please. The Jacksonville Jaguars, Trevor Lawrence, please come save our moribund franchise, right? That he'll let people develop with the running game, with the defense, so they're not overwhelmed. Which side of that equation are you on?
Yeah, there's a lot of variables that I think people are kind of ignoring. And one of them is what the situation that they come into in terms of, like, draft slot. Like you mentioned, you know, Trevor Lawrence, like, save us. Kyler Murray was also, like, save us.
Yeah.
You know, and those guys, I think, are equipped. But everyone's not equipped to do that. I think there are a lot more Mac Joneses and even, like, a Dak Prescott or Jalen Hurts, right, come in when our team doesn't stink. Well, I think the Cowboys might have stunk the year before, but before they got Dak. But, like, in general, I just think there's something to – there's a lot more guys who can come in and just – not stink versus like guys who can come in and be great. You know what I mean? I look at it almost like college coaches, right? Head coaches at the NCAA level. I think there's not a lot of coaches who can do it like a Mike Leach can do. Like you can be 2-8 or 2-10 or whatever. Mike Leach can get you to a bowl game the next year, build your whole thing from the ground. He can do that. But I don't think there's that many guys who can. I think there's a ton of guys who can come in and let's say the coach goes 10-2, he goes to the NFL and the new guy just, you know, keeps you above water. I think there's a ton of guys who can do that. Mm-hmm. And just flipped out the quarterbacks. I do have confidence in Pete and John to find like a guy who doesn't stink. Like that's, I don't even think you need a Pro Bowl guy. Like I just think they can find a guy who does not stink. A, because I think again with 7-on-7 and stuff, there are just going to be more guys who don't stink. And I think that when you're asking a guy to just come in and not stink, the burden on him is not as high. So the level of failure, his low floor may not be as much of a factor. Now, if you're asking me, do I think they can come in a guy, find a guy who's great? I don't know. I don't know if I trust anybody really to find that right away other than Andy Reid.
Right.
To be honest, that dude is a QB guru. And the other part of that real quick is I think that Pete Carroll feels his system is quarterback friendly for some of those reasons you mentioned, like run game, defense. But I still think that it goes back to what I mentioned earlier, that what Pete is doing is asking your quarterback to be really great and basically situational football still, you know, and that is hard. I don't care what the system is, right? It's 3rd and 9, all that run game, physical, doesn't matter. Like, dude, we need a first down, right? Can you do it? Can you read these coverages? Can you, you know, read these safeties, how they're disguising? So I don't trust them necessarily to find a guy who's great. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But I do believe in their ability to just find a guy who can just kind of hold his own and doesn't stink. And honestly, you look around the league, doesn't stink will keep you employed, you know, as a front office. So good luck to them finding that.
Hey, thanks, man. We always appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.